Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today for another opportunity to have an in-depth conversation about a topic that really will empower your life. And as you know, this show is all about empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. I'd like to welcome new listeners, and if you are just tuning in right now, I invite you to go over to my website, which is What Women Must Know. If you opt in there, I'll send you these archived shows so you won't have to miss any of these important conversations. And also, I have some special reports that I send out once you opt in to my newsletter. And my Facebook page, which is also What Women Must Know, is a great place to go because I post on a daily basis. And, you know, it's all about giving you the best information, the what I call truthful information that lets you navigate through this world. And there's so much confusing information out there, and I do my best to pick out the pieces that will be most helpful and most accurate so you can make those decisions based on really good information. So let's talk about today's conversation. I'm really so happy to have a wonderful guest with us today. And his name is Robert O. Williams. Let me just tell you a little bit about Robert. He is an extraordinary talent that has developed an ability, a huge talent, playing the saxophone, which eventually landed him in his dream job of touring with the Beach Boys. We all love the Beach Boys. Williams' search for spirituality reached a pivotal moment when he learned that, despite years of dedication to the saxophone, a physical disability would prevent him for extended periods of time from playing the instrument he loved. It was his search for the rekindling of the spirituality of his childhood and his love of music, the carrier waves of pure heart love, that led him to discover TM. This discovery was crucial to the events that would happen next. Nearly dying multiple times, clear vision and communication with his guru, revelations of sacred geometry, and travels through the dimensions. Robert's experiences fired his desire to bring to mankind the gift that he had discovered as he realized that science knowledge of the interface between the physical and the metaphysical could be the realm that could speed mankind's move from fear to love. His tenacity and unwavering pursuit resulted in the quantum code technology, a breakthrough that is destined to have a profound impact on manifesting a better world. With his book, Love is the Power, Robert spreads an invaluable message, simple yet essential. And with his Heart Plus app, he ensures that we can move forward on a better path to be heart-driven humans. So we have a lot to talk about today, some fascinating topics, and it's my great pleasure to welcome Robert O. Williams to the show today. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Dr. Cheryl. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you for that kind introduction.
Well, it's just great having you here. You're such an interesting man, Robert, and I'm sure you have so many amazing things to share with us on your journey and to inspire us. You know, our journeys are part of the story that we have claimed so we can then share it and inspire other people. And we all have our stories, and you certainly have a really fascinating one. So I think we should just start at the beginning of your journey and your life and what it was like for you that led you to some extraordinary experiences and people and places.
Sure. And before I start with my story, I want to acknowledge and to emphasize that regardless of our stories and our past histories, the most important place for our attention is in the here and now. And although I confess that I've had a very fascinating life in hindsight and odd things and interesting stories to tell, none of those really capture what love is and what motivates me from moment to moment. But nevertheless, I grew up with the ability to see things that other people could not see or didn't admit to seeing. I think all of us have a certain amount of clairvoyance when we're born, and we see things that are so-called non-physical. I had that as well, and I remained seeing different kinds of beings in the garden, different kinds of nature spirits, devas. They're called by many names. I had one being in particular that would visit me almost daily in the backyard. We had a great backyard, a lot of plants and trees, and my mom's garden. And the corner where I just dug a huge hole just for some reason. And this one being would stood out from the rest, and because he engaged directly with me. Now, by the way, I had a debate with a psychologist, and he said, you know, all that can be explained by your imagination and brain chemistry. Maybe. And if that is the case, then so be it, because what this being showed me was very profound and at the time made no sense or little sense to me, but then later in my life I recalled those adventures with him, and it's part of the technology that we'll talk later about. But his name was Jing, and he would show me around, and particularly when, for instance, when it rained, he would position me so I could see the rainbow. And then, so that was quite exciting to him and quite beautiful. We all love looking at rainbows. Then he would show me that all that we needed to do was turn on the sprinkler. And with the sun in its right position, not too many clouds, there is another rainbow, you know. So just to make a long, many adventurous times with Jing, his name was Jing, I realized that the rainbows are always present. It is just the environmental conditions that allow our physical eyes to see them or not. There's a simile throughout my childhood and early years that what we are seeing is only a small percentage of what reality is. What our five senses are able to translate into an impression on our nervous system is limited. And yet at the same time, when we see something, there's always more to it. So the rainbows were my first epiphany that even though most of the time we don't see rainbows, all that you have to do is just create water and a certain amount of light and the rainbow appears. So the rainbow has always been there. The rainbows have always been there and hidden for most of us, but can be ignited or activated with the right environmental conditions. Jing also showed me... We had a lot of snails in the backyard, and they'd crawl around. And he was very interested in my awareness of the shell itself, the snail shell. I had to say that 20 times to be able to say it right. Now I can't. Snail shell. The snail shell actually follows a pattern that is found in most places of nature, and it's the ratio of how that pattern unfolds, the golden mean, might have heard about that, the Fibonacci series, these sacred ratios that govern the evolution of most living things on planet Earth, meaning the snail wasn't always a snail with a shell. It was something prior to that, and then at certain points of the snail's evolution, you could see that spiral. And that very geometry that is seen in the snail shell is also in our own DNA. It's also in how our own cells and our bodies propagate, how they form. So another simile, that there's basic ratios or basic patterns throughout nature that we are not separate from, that are engaged in our everyday lives, our consciousness. This intelligence is is what Jing was attempting to show me as much as possible in my early years, and later I found out why. So that's my childhood. Jing left when I was when I turned 12, or shortly after my adolescent initiation, and he just said it, like, you know, you're on your own, and that was very stressful for me, and I felt very alone and very empty. Except occasionally when I would play my saxophone, which I had started playing when I was 7, I would get into this place where, and musicians can relate to this, where something more is happening than just me blowing the horn and pushing down the right keys to make a sound or a scale. Something kind of takes over, and this is in a wonderful way. We get out of our own ways, and our creative intelligence is then activated. No matter if it's a musician or an art or just speaking or living, we have that connection to a field of energy or to a consciousness that is enlivening, that when we tap in there, we actually gain energy. It's not just from the food we eat. It's from pure life force. We've all had that experience. We get epiphanies. For in my case, it was in that practice room in the beginning, and then later in groups, where it wasn't all the time, but I would get into this place and just witness, in a sense, this phenomenon of music happening. That matched the experience I was having earlier with Jing in the backyard, that lightness of being, that freedom, that love. So then music was my way to access that. Then, you want me to go on?
Well, yeah, but I just want to say that I think that as children we're so open, these childhood friends aren't really figment of our imaginations at all. I know too many people who had experiences of other beings that were there and were teaching in some way or other. And, you know, to dismiss it as saying it's just a fantasy, I think it's part of the problem of this academic mindset that doesn't understand there are other realities, there are other beings, there are other dimensions, and there are opportunities and moments when they can be accessed. And especially for children who are so open to receive these other beings, frequencies, dimensions, whatever. So I'm
yes.
supportive of you.
I bet you if we had a raise of hands in this audience of yours, how many of you have experienced seeing a nature spirit or some kind of celestial being? I bet you most of us. And prior to going on the air here, Dr. Sherrill, we were talking about, or I was talking about my daughter, and she's 12, but I remember in the early years, she would see these nature spirits, and we would both see them. And we would, and she would, our eyes would follow these little nature spirits. And fast forward, I'm a father, and I've had that experience where other people who could see things or clairvoyance, and we tested each other. How much is our imagination, or how much consensus do we have? So I agree with you. There are realities that are not limited to photon collision and the five senses, and thank goodness, because those realities are like rainbows. And once we receive a certain amount of, or once collective consciousness evolves to a certain state, and I am jumping forward in the conversation, then we start to wake up and we see things we've never seen before. We realize things that have always been there, but latent. We've always had love. We've always had the intelligence of healing. We've always had the ability to solve problems that prior seemed unsolvable. And that's an exciting reality. That's an exciting potential of being alive right now.
And that's why, you know, I have these conversations with so many people who are exploring the possibilities, whether it's in healing, whether it's with the connection to our spiritual self. We need to be affirmed and reminded that this is in fact, part of the experience that is happening for us, and to embrace it, encourage it, call it forth, because it's really the key to allowing us to remember and activate who we really are, which is an exciting experience when you tap into it, when you can get past the ego's perception and know there's something greater going on. I've been really privileged. I've had some visits down to the Amazon and to Costa Rica, where I've been working with the shaman there and working with their experiences and their teachings and with their medicines down there. Boy, it lets you know there's a lot more going on here than meets the eye. And that's a good thing. I think that's a really good thing.
It is. Yeah. And there are the dark sides of humanity and other beings as well, which is why knowledge and experience go together. We need to learn discernment and trial by error sometimes, but mostly these days it is tapping into the heart's innate intelligence. And when we talk about the heart, it's interesting because intuitively, humans for a very, very long time have known there's something special about our hearts, not just our physical hearts, but even from the earliest poems onward, when a person said, "I love you with all my," they didn't say, "I love you with all my brain," "I love you with all my knees." There was something intrinsic about our own hearts and our own that area of our aliveness, that area of consciousness that has always intuitively been there. And when we hold children, we hold them to our hearts. The heart is a information transducer. It transduces higher and higher sources of our own potential into our current reality, and radiates out information from that higher source as well, which is why loving from our hearts, if we understand or we experience that quality of love, it is a transformative power. It is one of the reasons I wrote the book. And this love that we're talking about now, this state of consciousness, isn't a passive, "I'm just going to love everything and everybody and allow myself to be like a loose football on the field and whoever picks me up can run anywhere they want." This love is actually quite alert and quite able to discern what is in resonance with that higher frequency and what is not. And if it's not in resonance, then there's the other chakras that can immediately defend ourselves if somebody tries to hurt our children, or, you know, it is a an organ and a state of consciousness. I'm saying organ too because the heart, the actual physical heart, contains special kinds of cells that are not found anywhere else in the body. But also the quality of the heart has the ability to reconcile paradoxes. So we live in a time and in a physical reality full of paradoxes, life and death, full of polarity, good and bad, left and right, me versus you. What the mind does, it's invested in those separate entities and wants to, you could say, it wants to ignite a separate being that is able to feel itself as separate and then somewhat in competition to the rest of reality. That is a function or one of the reasons that the heart has been overlooked, because the mind loves going into that state of polarity and defining itself as some kind of superior relationship. Or even if it says it's equal, there's something about me that is, you know, that is invested in remaining me, but not in a holistic sense, in a separate sense. That is the second energy center, the second chakra, and how it's been evolving through a long time. The heart chakra, on the other hand, has this ability to maintain its individuality. I am Robert, and you are Cheryl, and you are, you know, whoever you are. The heart can not only recognize, but love individual to individual, and at the same time, reconcile the separateness and understand and realize that we are one. We are one at the same time with many individual aspects. It's one of the amazing things. Remember in somewhere in school we heard that there were no two snowflakes alike, and then later there's no two cells alike, no two fingerprints that are alike. How can this, no two planets, there are no two anythings that are alike. We all have this individual program to uniquely create something. And at the same time, there is unity. There is a golden place. There is that term, the golden rule. And seeing things that others couldn't see, I remember literally seeing when love was unconditional, when someone or a mother was loving her child, that's a good example. There is gold light there. I saw it when I was young, and later on, I thought to myself, maybe that's where that term, back to the poets, is that why they call it the golden rule? Just that color and that frequency? Is that why we value the mineral gold? Because it is similar to the frequency of light that happens when unconditional love is activated. Isn't that fascinating?
It's fascinating, and what's really fascinating is the science that's going on that has to do with understanding that the heart is the seat of intelligence. It actually is a very different organ than what we thought it was, just, you know, circulating our blood. It actually is the a seat of our intelligence, and the HeartMath Institute is doing some really great research understanding the consciousness that exists in our heart. Our literal, you know, heart energies are so different than anything else we've, you know, associated with. So we're learning that there is a frequency, there's an energy associated with this thing, this organ, but it's really an expression of consciousness that is resonating in that organ.
Yeah, and like all things, this aspect or this idea of a carrier wave. So let me just speak to that just for a second so we can make sense of these differences. Everything is a carrier wave of something else, meaning for a brief time I was a DJ on a jazz radio station in Alameda, California, KJAZ 93.7 on your FM dial. Jazz across the bay. So what was 93.7?
Embedded forever in those brain cells now.
I switched that on like you wouldn't believe, and talk about Duke Ellington and anything you want, jazz-wise. So the carrier wave was 93.7. That's a megahertz. That's a vibrational wave. 93.7 mega, I think a million vibrations per second. So that is a stagnant carrier wave, 93.7. That doesn't. So if you're tuning across the FM dial, then you tune into that one discrete frequency, and then what's carried on that is Robert Williams and his jazz show, or Duke Ellington, or whatever. There's all these things that can be carried, and then in my voice there is something more. In your voice there is something more. There's my emotional content, my consciousness that the words, and now we're through telephones and all kinds of other ways to transmit information. So I think we get the idea. There are also, technically, there's harmonics and there's superharmonics and subharmonics. So any tone has harmonics to it, and it just goes on and on to infinity. So there's a hint as to how we can access that which is unseen, is to know that right now, as we are listening to this conversation, and as I'm speaking as an individual, there are millions, if not an infinite amount of things that are here right now, in addition to my singular voice, your singular set of ears and the nervous systems. So it kind of like hints, because I truly believe we're approaching a quantum shift of consciousness right now, and we're approaching something that is embedded in nature, something that makes sure that there's evolution, that there's progress. These are, it's obvious when we look around, you know, the plants grow, they start out as a seed, they go through all these different phases. What the seed looks like is completely different than what the rose flower looks like. And there's different laws and there's different aspects of each phase. There are phases of humanity which have been written down in and prophesized and recorded actually in ancient scripture. And there are phases of consciousness that we experience every day. We go to sleep, there's no consciousness for most of us. We go into dream state, there's a phase of our reality, dream. Then we wake up. Then now what we're attempting to understand, which will absolutely be understood through our hearts, and we attempt through our minds, is that there is a quickening of evolution happening in our own consciousness, in each of us, and in humanity as a whole. Do you agree?
Yes, I subscribe to that theory and belief because it just is the thing that makes sense. You know, we're here on this learning journey, and we're, you know, evolution is about remembering who we are and bringing in these amazing abilities so we can create a different type of reality for ourselves. So I'm certainly, you know, with you on that. And I think that's what the spiritual journey is all about, is giving people a connection to a greater reality and the possibilities that we all have within us, which is why we search and why we have these conversations and why we read things and why, you know, you create the music you do. I was, as we continue this conversation, I really wanted to also ask you about those nearly dying multiple times experiences. What did you learn from that? And did you actually leave your body? Did you actually have a near-death experience and then came back?
Yeah, most definitely. I was in Santa Barbara in 1979, springtime, beautiful time of year, and I was I had been really sick for many years, actually, and kept getting worse and worse. I had visited as many doctors as I could find, and none of them really knew what was going on. They could do blood chemistry and see that my liver was bad and this wasn't working and that wasn't working and on and on, but they could never find the cause. So I can come back to that, but one morning I was just, I had pretty much reached the state of being bedridden and barely able to do anything. I'm 6'3" and I was down to 115 pounds.
Wow.
Wasn't digesting anything, and everything was just failing. And let me say this. I went to my last visit to the doctor's office was in that state, and he said, "My God, you know, if you keep going like this, you're going to be dead in 6 months. I don't know what's going on in your body, but everything is beginning to shut down, your organs and life systems." And I thought to myself, you know what? If I really, really wanted to die, that's the place I should go, to the hospital. I just intuitively, not that I'm against allopathic medicine and I love hospitals, but it was kind of a common sense. They had been studying me for the last over 2 years, what was going to change if I was in there all the time. And also I believe it was an intuitive calling to not go that route. And so I stopped. I continued on with my healthy habits, eating well, green drinks, that kind of thing. But I stopped my search. I stopped my kind of, I let go of the hysterical fear that I had started off when I first got sick of what was going on with me. I was still young, wasn't married, didn't have a child, so not too many attachments at that time. I woke up one morning and tried to get to the bathroom, and either I passed out or I tripped and fell and hit my head. I'm not sure. It was a blackout there, but I do remember being out of my body, looking down on the bathroom floor, seeing my body sprawled out there, and thinking, what is seeing my body? Because my eyeballs are in my body, and yet I'm seeing this body in all detail on the bathroom floor. What is this? And I had read about higher states of consciousness, different domains, celestial life. And so I wasn't completely shocked that I was able to see my body. I had not read about near-death experiences, and now that's a common thing you read, but seeing one's body down below and so forth. But that was my experience at first. Then I had the idea or had the thought that, oh, I'm dying. And I had absolutely no fear, Dr. Cheryl. I just, for whatever reason, I had accomplished a heck of a lot in my, I was 25 years old and had a lot of money, had toured with the Beach Boys, you know, and lived a very, very full life, was meditating, was of the belief that life doesn't end, it just changes forms. So I thought, I'm ready. So I turned, figuratively turned, and then there was absolutely nothing but pure light. And that's the only word I can describe it. It's not like sunlight or light from a bright light bulb. It was just this purity, just this complete, full, no problem place, full of love. That was my, I guess, second experience out of body. My third experience was to be just a little bit separated from the light. First, there was light. There was no me experiencing anything, including the light. There was only light. And I only knew that after I became separated from it, which is kind of an interesting philosophical point. We don't know our unity until we know our separateness. So now there was a consciousness experiencing the light. There's three things. There was the object, which is light. There was the subject, which was me, you could say. And then there's this process of experience. Then a being showed up. And either my mind pulled that out of my archives of files, or there was an actual being, meaning like a master, golden light, and he was there in front of me. Doesn't matter if he was real or my project of my consciousness. Somebody called, oh, you're projecting that. Doesn't matter, because that allowed me to have a choice. The being said, you have a choice. And I knew the choice was to go back into the light or to go back into my body. And my question was, do I have a purpose? And the answer was yes. And so as soon as he said yes, I began to feel a little bit more of a form. Like, instead of just pure subjectivity witnessing this, then there was like my subtle body, and I began to then see the various dimensions that are between our physical selves, our bodies, and you could say the light. So it was a fascinating journey. A lot of near-death experience, at first you see the relatives that have passed on, and they greet you and they in the tunnel and they guide you. For me, it wasn't that way until I was coming back. I saw my body, and then there was light, and then there was a choice. And then I saw these different dimensions, these different realities, which I write about in detail in the book. So I won't go through all that because it's very fascinating. And there is a place where you begin to realize that you are tethered to your body for a wonderful purpose. It isn't an obstruction like a lot of Eastern philosophies, you know, or even Christian, where it doesn't get really, really good until you're in heaven. We have to wait, and our bodies, in a certain sense, are this kind of temporary zone, and we've got to do the best we can until we get to some nirvanic samadhi place where we are free and there's love. What I realized as I was coming back into my body is that is that place, that love, that creative intelligence that can lift all the boats on the sea by raising the waters. You know, I use these analogies. It is in our bodies. It is not separate from light or separate from our other celestial and higher dimensional places, but it is holographically in our bodies as well. So I was in my body, so I kind of like woke up, you could say, or reintegrated, felt my body, wiggled my toes, opened my eyes, and the first thing I remember hearing was the nature sounds, the birds chirping, the wind in the garden, the insects. We were by the ocean, so the beautiful sound of the ocean waves. And there was a probably maybe 2 or 3 minutes where I had no pain, but I was in my body. And I was still very ill, so the pain came back. But in those 2 or 3 minutes, there was a unity incarnated as me, as a separate body, separate than all the other human bodies, but in unity with the intelligence and the beauty of this planet. And so the birds chirping and the sounds of nature, the intelligence that was governing that this whole system was the same intelligence that started my heart beating, that started my breath breathing again. There was no separation there. And that was probably the most exciting, the most beautiful epiphany, having this near-death experience, was the realization that we have accessibility to this amazing, some people call it the cosmic computer, some people call it God, some people call it love. There's an obvious intelligence. We don't even know how a seed goes from a seed to a sprout. We've studied and studied and studied, but there's a mysterious life force that is nature that has to be involved with life, not through our own mental, chemical reverse engineering. It never works. We can make something look like a seed or make something look like a rose bush, but it's not real. It's not living. That is a area of creation that is always and always will be a sacred place of our wholeness, of our beingness. And it's a sacred place of love. So I then felt my body and then felt my head hurting and like, oh my God, I don't feel very well. But I felt fantastic at the same time because I had this experience. And that changed my life. I picked up myself, cleaned up my mess, and went on to my next chapter, which was to investigate some of the things that I'd seen in these higher dimensions, which included symbols, and mandalas, and geometries, and how that is related to, at first I studied plant growth and how plants grew in those different informational fields. So that was in 1979.
Well, and obviously your body healed after that experience.
It did.
You know,
not immediately. It wasn't one of these, you know, I'm completely okay. In hindsight, they found massive poisons in my body. And to this day, I don't know how I got poisoned. I ate something or somebody, but doesn't really matter. But it took years and years to discover these poisons through, you know, they don't test for poisons usually when you're looking sick, maybe more these days. But yes, I did heal up. I was able to live, but I was also kind of like uncomfortable enough to begin looking at my own pain in a different way. And I began to find ways in which to go towards the pain without resistance and towards the pathologies that were uncomfortable without resistance, and then awaken to these higher dimensions because I wasn't fearing death anymore and I wasn't resisting the pain. And that I talk about in the book as well, but I want to emphasize, I don't believe that enlightenment or freedom or love has to happen because of suffering. In fact, just the opposite. I don't believe that we have to be in pain to awaken. That is why this time is so relevant, because we've already broken our seedness. We've already gone through the sprout, the stems, the leaves. And yes, we have gone through terrible times as a human race. I mean, who needs to even ask? We've gone through horrible events. And even now, somewhere, there's some abuse, there's some cruelty, there's terrible things happening right now. But here you and I are on your show, and we're talking about something that intuitively has answers to that, has ways in which collectively we can raise the quality of life. We can actually find our ways with our hearts to a reality with at least less suffering and less cruelty, if not an age that has been prophesied that is absent of cruelty and suffering and abuse.
So let's talk about the quantum code technology that you have created or channeled or brought into this realm. Can you help us understand what that is?
Sure. When I was coming back from the light, from this or this place, I saw there was a dimension or a domain that was full of symbols and sounds and all kinds of wonderful feelings. But the symbols were very interesting to me, and I wrote as many of them as I could remember in my journals within an hour after that experience in 1979. I later found a book on symbols. I love this. You know, the Santa Barbara Public Library. Walking down there, and there's this book in the upper shelf, kind of like sticking out, you know, in the movies. It's like, read me. So I went up there, and the book's called Symbols, and I saw the very same symbols that I had seen on this trip of dying and returning in the book. These were symbols that were found through all the different times of humanity, in the indigenous art, in the ancient religions, Sanskrit. In Sanskrit, they're called mandalas. There are circular forms, and there are certain geometries in the middle, and there's all kinds of iconography and ways in which these symbols are represented. So one in particular in the book, thinking, wow, that was one of the brightest ones I saw. And I began reading that, again, the symbol is not only from ancient Hinduism, but found in Cherokees, Taoism, and ancient Christian art. So I was reading about this one mandala, and it said the ancient Hindus would actually meditate on this symbol to open their heart. So I'm thinking, what? Wow, what is this? This was one of the symbols I had seen. So I had done research on the symbol prior and then became very interested in this symbol and found it in everywhere. So that's a hint to this technology. Symbols are symbols that activate energy. So musicians know if we see five lines on a piece of paper and a treble clef and some dots, even all humans at this point, or most humans, they look at that and they know it has something to do with music. Depending upon your state of consciousness, those symbols turn into sounds. And for Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, who I had the wonderful pleasure of working with side by side, literally on the piano bench, when he saw music, he immediately was able to sing exactly the same note. He had perfect pitch. So the symbol was very, just almost superficial. He looked at the music, sang the notes, and he could sing a whole symphony, and I can go on and on. It's like Amadeus and Mozart. These creative geniuses can see things in a millisecond, and then they use the symbols to convey the information to musicians and other people. So this symbol that I had seen that ancient Hindu students would meditate on was about opening the heart. So now if you take that symbol and you are in a state of consciousness, your heart is an expression of the symbol. It's like the sound behind the note A on a piece of music paper. So there are symbols that are signposts for evolution. So in ancient Sanskrit literature, it talks about an age called Kali Yuga. There's other religions, and they talk similar ways. I'll just focus on one for simplicity. Kali Yuga is an age where humans learn about their separateness and their ability to kill each other for food, and, you know, that's a phase of development. And then there's a bridge, and then there's a phase of development where the consciousness of unity is realized. There are specific symbols in nature that are embedded in our very consciousness that are about the bridge to this state of unified consciousness and about the unified consciousness itself, where the heart, where instead of the mind dominating our moment-by-moment perception and definitions of reality and interchange of energy, it is actually our hearts that begin to reign and begin to be more prominent in our consciousness, if not completely prominent. And so those are the symbols that I saw, and those are the symbols that have been written and that are found in cultures. And I worked with a very, very brilliant scientist named William Tiller at Stanford University. At the time, he was the chairman of the Department of Material Science. He taught how crystals grow in the earth, very conventional class, crystallography and crystals, and what the earth has to go through to create these amazing crystals. And crystals have these same geometries, have these same ratios of energy in various forms, different kinds of crystals, different times of their development. So I worked with him and the symbols, and we figured out a way to actually broadcast the information of the symbol through electronics, through crystal oscillators. This is like taking a 20-year span of research and just telling you. So it didn't just flash in front of me. I had to work with very smart people. So we had crystal oscillators that generated at first radio frequencies and then subtle frequencies with carrier waves. I talked about carrier waves. That's where the quantum code technology came from. It is the very geometries of our own higher state of existence. It's some symbology that is seen on subtle levels and actually seen under microscopes in our very cells physically, and is synergistically corresponding to our state of awareness. So if we're in nature, if we're down by the sea, if we're up in the mountains, and we're away from what's called man-made technology, man-made or human-made based on the mind, based on figuring things out analytically with brain cells, which is great. We needed that phase. But based on the heart's understanding of creation, which is, like I said in the beginning, always mysterious, always has this unknown quality of beauty. And when we see the sunset, there's never two sunsets. This is the symbology that is beginning to resonate with each of us, so that when we look at each other, and even how the eyes are made and the iris and the geometries and circumference of the eyeball, it is all there. And as we begin to resonate with that state of consciousness, we actually activate our ability to love, our higher love. And that love is powerful. And that love collectively can change the reality on this planet and is destined to change the reality on this planet. And that was my motivation to create a way in which these very same symbols that are innate and part of each of us, that are us, can be, let's just say, enhanced. And let me turn off this silly speaking about technology. That can be enhanced and more accessible to our own moment-by-moment aliveness.
I mean, this is so fascinating. So, what's the practical? How do we practically access that? Is there, when you talked about the crystals and programming the crystals, is this something that is available for people?
Yes, confirms this miraculous time that we're in, because working with some very smart people, we were able to send these frequencies, send these mandalas, send these symbols. These are all synonymous and difficult. Send these fields of information into a URL that is now at Apple Computer and Google, and broadcast it through the airwaves, through satellites, and all the different means that cell phone transmissions are sent and received, so that you can download an app. It's called the Heart Plus app. And you go to Google, and you do a search for Heart and the Simple Plus, and you'll see this app. One-time fee, I think it's $1 or $1.90. One-time fee, you get an app that goes on your cell phone, and you are now linked to these 108 frequencies or codes of information that are in your own field of energy yourself, and you'll feel this resonant. It's like recognizing somebody you haven't seen in a long time, or coming home after a long journey. It's not just the person's physical nature. It is the feeling of them. It's their consciousness. It's the geography of home. Those are the 108 frequencies. That's what we have always had, yet they haven't been able to express themselves like the rainbow, like the hidden rainbow. The environmental conditions and the state of consciousness hadn't yet evolved to that point where these experiences of love can actually be enhanced. And we're on this bridge. So the practical is to go on apple.com. The App Store, through Apple and Google, and do a search and download it. Then you also become part of a community where we're kind of like, we think raising consciousness and exploring love is a good thing. That's all the community is about. And I almost forgot one of the super cool thing is that we did a 2-year study on the effects of the app on cell phones, on smartphones, in a controlled environment conducted by Dr. Beverly Rubik, University of California biophysicist. And she found that after using the app, with the app on, very, very super controlled study, so there wasn't a placebo effect. Nobody knew exactly what was the real app or what was the fake app, what was connected to our URLs, what wasn't. People who were using the app, their actual physical hearts got better, got more strong, got stronger. If I could speak correctly, that would be a good thing. So cardiologists have a measurement of heart health called heart rate variability. And if your heart rate variability is strong, that means your heart is strong, your physiology, your whole body is not stressed, or there's a degree of stress that is low if your heart rate variability is high. So Beverly Rubik, the scientist, saw that people that had the real app on, their heart rate variability improved by over 30%, meaning stress decreased by over 30% just by having the app on, just by enhancing our own innate intelligence, just by enhancing our own ability to live more from our hearts. Our heart health, our physical heart health improved, our feelings, you could say, of stress, and our physiological readings of stress decreased. So that's just kind of like, we didn't even know. These are the 108 mandalas that have been there since the beginning of time. And now we're here in 2017 using cell phones everywhere that haven't grown out of a bush or out of our arms. These are, but we found a way to integrate modern technology with natural frequencies and natural information that has been proven in a scientific lab. It's good for us.
Well, how exciting. So you've had this experience, you started out early childhood with this being that was there teaching you. Then you had your near-death experience, at least I don't know if he had others, but the one you were sharing with us, and having access to this level of knowledge when you were out of your body. And then you spent many years with these scientists being able to translate these frequencies that you saw in your vision into a technology that we can have for $1.99 on an app when you go to the Apple store. That about sums it up?
That about sums it up. And I'm humbled whenever I hear that. This happened in spite of me, not because of me. I mean, that proves I couldn't have figured this out, for sure.
That's pretty phenomenal. And to know that you were given this information and you found a way to translate it into a frequency that we can access and get the benefit of when we go and purchase this $1.99 app. I mean, and it's there with us on our phone all the time. So these are sounds that we listen to, right?
They're not sounds. It's just a field of energy. Yeah. You just turn on your phone.
Yes.
And it's like all of a sudden you feel like you're walking down by the beach. That field of
energy. Wow. All right. So we're just it's a way to transmit these frequencies into our being. So it's not even a sound it's not music. It's just
some people call it silent music. You know, it's got that feeling, but it's not sound.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's best used with and earphones, right? Headset?
No.
Is it?
You just use your cell phone like you use your cell phone to talk to people, to get apps, to play games, whatever you do. Those frequencies, if you turn it on, you got to turn it on. If you turn off your phone, it goes off. You got to go just like another, like a.
If you just have your phone on and you have that app installed, it's transmitting those frequencies.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. So your phone becomes a healing device.
Yeah.
Wow. How cool
exactly.
is that?
Yeah. Yeah. And we can't make medical claims and la la la, FDA. But let's say that enough research has been done to know that it's not harmful.
Yes, you've had it validated.
Yes.
You know, the studies that you just told us were done by highly prestigious scientists, and you know that I'm aware of. So, we're dealing with the realm of energy and energy healing and energy frequencies and raising our frequencies, and that's what your whole life seems to have been about, Robert, to be able to bring these things through to us.
Yeah. That's what we're about. If collectively all of your listeners, all of you, you know, I can't see you, if we had not evolved to this point together, none of this would have been possible. So we are one consciousness that, you know, I just happen to be really lucky to see these things. We all have our special gifts.
Right. You're blessed.
We really
bring it in.
We really do.
Well, okay, so we've come to the end of the show. So the best website, I have two websites. You have to tell me which one's the best. Is it healtheworldproject.com?
Right now we have a website called loveisthepower.com. Loveisthepower.com.
Loveisthepower.com. And that's the best place for people to get to the app as well, loveisthepower.com. Okay.
That's
so everyone, go check out loveisthepower.com. Download the app plus. You have to go heart and the plus sign to get that app. And, gosh, do it. I mean, see what happens. Experience the possibilities when you work with these frequencies that Robert's been telling us about and dedicating his life to. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. It's fantastic. I'm excited. So, we've come to the end of the show. It's so fascinating. This is our conversation with Robert O. Williams. He's the author of Love is the Power. Go to loveisthepower.com. Learn more about his work, his book, and the app, the Heart Plus app, which I'm going to go to right away as soon as we finish our conversation, Robert. And thank you so much for sharing all this amazing information and your journeys and your inspiration. It's just been such a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you, Dr. Sherrill, and thank you to all your listeners. We're all together with this. I love you all. Thank you again.
And to a great note to end this conversation with, so to all of you listening, Always remember to honor the wisdom of your feminine self, which is your heart energy. So until next time, have a great week. Bye for now.